Why do some believers fail to stand up or speak up for Christ when challenged or when questioned?
Because to them, the Goliath is just too big for them.
Because the what?
The Goliath is just too big for them.
Okay, so the Goliath, you said, is too big for them. So the challenge is too big. All right? Or they feel as if the challenge is too big, too overwhelming. All right?
Fear of man.
All right, the fear. Fear of man. Okay. Okay. Afraid that you'll get punished at work.
A lack of confidence or knowledge.
Okay. A lack of confidence in their own knowledge. Good. Good, Jessica. All right, not remembering a scripture or a truth to share. Anybody else have a thought?
I don't know about real born-again believers, but sometimes they just don't have the confidence in their own faith to recognize the value of standing up for Christ.
Okay. So they don't have the confidence in their own faith to stand up for Christ and to hold firm. All right. Good. Anybody else?
I don't feel Gary over here back home.
Say what? Okay. Just, you said you're...
Well, I don't trust.
All right. You don't trust or... Okay. You don't trust to say the truth because you don't know what they'll do with it?
How about the Moses complex?
Expand upon that.
I'm not adequate to speech.
All right. Where they just don't feel adequate. They don't feel like they are worthy to speak. All right.
I would argue sometimes they don't need to. You don't need to throw your pearls to the pigs, right?
Okay. So sometimes, depending on who it is, you know, if they... Right. Okay. So you don't want to cast your pearls before the swine and answer a fool according to his folly. Malcolm?
I hate to say it, but sometimes we just don't care.
Okay.
There's some people we
probably
don't care.
So an apathy in that? All right. Yes, John?
Steve, it took me a long while. Even after I was a believer, to be able to have the faith, the strength to stand up. But you know, it's through my prayers to God that He enabled me.
Right.
So now I have no problem. As a Gideon, I'm on the street corner telling people about God. I use my business as a Christian to pray with people and to ask them if they would like to have a testimony. I was able to share that the Sabbath yesterday.
Wow.
I prayed with them.
Right.
So it was a gradual thing, but I guess as I talked to the pastor today, I'm like a pressure. It took me a long while to simmer in there. But once I understood, there's no turning back. I have all the strength that God gives.
Okay. All right. So for some, it just takes time. I know when I was a teenager, there were times, depending again, you know, other teens were, you know, I grew up in a small town. It was all Catholic and, you know, all my, you know, I wouldn't really say friends. I went to Christian school, so really my friends were at school with me in church and the youth group. But, you know, when you're riding your bike around town, and we were actually allowed to do that when I was a kid. You didn't have to worry about not coming home or whatever. But, you know, it was like... Well, y'all are the same probably, you know, it's when the street lights come on, you know, that was our signal to start heading for home kind of thing. And, you know, it was our street was, there were two streets that went down the center of town. And, you know, my mom and dad would always say, you know, as long as you stay on, you know, our side of the main street, don't cross over, you know, until I got older. So I could ride my bike anywhere I wanted on that side of town as long as I wanted. I just had to be home before it got dark kind of thing. But, you know, you'd run into other kids and around, and they, you know, and of course they all went to the Catholic church right up the street from me, and you know they'd be like, hey, I'm like obviously they didn't see me at church, and they're the altar boys and doing all that stuff, and You know, they'd start asking questions. And again, as John said, sometimes I don't know why, but, you know, the fear of, you know, being ostracized, or, you know, you're the odd man out kind of thing. And so, you know, there's, you know, all of them are together and you're not. And so you struggle with really giving a good, solid answer or trying to stand up for what you know you should. And I always felt really, really guilty afterwards. just felt like, you know, man, I blew that. You know, why didn't I just speak up? Why didn't I say something? And so it did take some time. But I think I've overcome that to some most of the time. Most of the time. All right. So let's look at John 16, starting in verse 29. John 16, 29 down through verse 33. If you've missed the past few weeks, this kind of is the conclusion of the time here where Jesus is trying to teach his disciples that he's going to be gone. And so he tells them, you know, a little while you're not going to see me, and then a little while you are going to see me, and then a little bit more while you won't see me again. And the disciples are really confused about all of this. They're not following what he's saying. And so in verse 25, he says, "I've said these things to you in figures of speech. The hour is coming when I'll no longer speak to you in figures of speech, but will tell you plainly about the Father. In that day you will ask in my name, and I do not say to you that I will ask the Father on your behalf, for the Father himself loves you, because you have loved me and have believed that I came from God. I came from the Father and have come into the world, and now I am leaving the world and going to the Father." All right, and kind of keep in mind verse 28 there. His disciples, now they say to him, "Ah, now you are speaking plainly and not using figurative speech. Now we know that you know all things and do not need anyone to question you. This is why we believe that you came from God." Jesus answered them, "Do you now believe? Behold, the hour is coming. Indeed, it has come when you will be scattered, each to his own home, and you will leave me alone. Yet I am not alone, for the Father is with me. I have said these things to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world." All right, so what prompted the disciples to realize that Jesus was all of a sudden speaking plainly? All right, because, you know, through all of this, they're questioning, they don't understand, and now all of a sudden it's like the light bulb goes on, and they say, "Ah, now you're speaking plainly." All right, so what was it that kind of triggered that? It was kind of in the preceding passage there, verses leading up to that. But what was it that kind of caused the light bulb to come on? Anybody see it?
Jesus
himself. All right, Jesus himself.
"I've been speaking figuratively. Time's going to come when we're speaking plainly now."
Okay, and then what did he say that kind of probably turned the corner for them? Verse 28, most specifically. Okay, you know, he says, "I came from my Father," right? And then he says, "And I came into this world, but now I'm going to leave the world. I'm leaving this world. I came here, now I'm leaving, and I'm going to go back to my Father." So again, so, you know, he said it before, but they didn't get it. Now he's just very plain, very matter of fact. And he says, you know, "I did come into the world. I came and I'm leaving." And I think it was kind of that finality of it, or maybe how he said it, we're not quite sure. But it's like the light bulb did come on, and the disciples realized all of a sudden, okay, now we get it. Now we understand. And not only that, but they go one step further in verse 30, and what do they say? Now they say, you know, "Not only do we understand what you're saying, but we also now are going to say that we know that you know all things. Because we believe that you did come from God. And because we believe that you came from God, we believe that you know all things." Now, again, it says, "Now we know all things. You do not need anyone to question you. This is why we believe that you came from God." So as we look at that, as we're thinking about that, what did the disciples mean by "no one needs to question Jesus"? You know, they said, "Now we know that you know all things and you do not need anyone to question you." So what was kind of prompting that statement by them. Okay, think back just a few verses earlier, or several verses earlier.
Well, actually, all throughout John, you see where not only did the religious leaders question Jesus, but quite often the disciples would say, well, what do you mean? Explain this.
Right, yeah. So we have a precedent all throughout the gospel where they don't understand and they're trying to follow along. But even very specifically in the what we've looked at the last few weeks, what was it that kind of question that prompted this more specifically? Anybody remember or see it? Yep.
Weren't they all talking to each other and trying to figure out what does he mean?
Yes, they exactly.
Didn't ask him, but
right.
They knew that they were
right. And you know, so they're questioning among themselves, what does he mean by this? A little while here and a little while there, and you know, and then what does Jesus say? I surmise you're questioning what I just said. And then they're like, oh, how'd he know? You know, were we too loud? Did he hear us? Or what, you know, so they're starting to put two and two together now. Whereas in the before, as Dick mentioned, in the previous, it's like they were oblivious, they didn't understand. But now they're starting to get it that, you know what, he knows all things because, you know, he couldn't have heard what we said. But he knows. He knew what we were talking about. So they seem to be responding to what Jesus said back in verse 19, which convinces them that Jesus did come from God because he knew things that otherwise he shouldn't have known. Back in verse 19, it says, Jesus knew that they wanted to ask him, so he said to them, is this what you're asking yourselves? And of course, you know, now they're putting that, and it's kind of blowing their minds. So the disciples' fear were real, weren't they? We're not going to excuse that. We've talked about that over and over again, about the fear and the emotion, and that it is real. Millie?
Comprehension.
Right.
And now they've lived with him for a while, and he's, you know, now they're able to hear it, they're able to know it.
Yeah, and as they're maturing and grasping and fully understanding some things more, then it's easier for them now to build upon that foundation and hear, truly listen and understand what he's saying. And so their fears are real, but and Jesus made it very clear that, you know, that they would abandon him. You know, so at this point, they're saying, you know what, Jesus, we believe in you. You know, we understand you're from the Father and you're here and you're leaving and we get it. All of that. And you know what? You are who you say you are. And then what does Jesus come back and say? He goes, you say that you believe in me, but you're going to abandon me. You're going to, you know, you're not going to hold firm. You're not going to support me. And again, they're probably going, man, you know, we just got this and now you're blasting us with this other thing. You know, and telling us that we're really, you know, we really don't believe you. And we just said we did. We're just now getting it. But he says the you know, he tells them just the reverse, that he is the one that holds them together. You know, the glue isn't the disciples. The glue is Christ.
Yeah.
You know, he's the one that holds us together. He's the one that holds us in his Father's hand. And so, even if they left him, he says, you know, I'm not going to leave you. I won't allow you to become an orphan. I won't allow you to be taken from me. You may leave, but you're still mine, is that idea. You know, I won't forget you. I won't leave you.
I was just amazed just thinking about what you call the Socratic method or whatever.
Uh-huh.
He answers a question with a question, you know.
Right.
But I was thinking that even when we're sharing our faith, that sometimes we might have to say, what do you mean by it? What do you mean by it? Is in that, you know, it's fallible, the Bible fallible, because sometimes people, we don't challenge their question, their say. They make statements. They can't back up. But they always challenge us about our words.
Mm, good point. Yeah. So learning to be more
questionable
with those that are confronting us and making them try to prove their point.
Yeah, where are you getting that from? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Good point, Malcolm. Good. You know, in John 14 and in 24:18, he says, "What? I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you." And then in John 16, he says, "The hour is coming. Indeed, it has come when you will be scattered each to his own home, and you and will leave me alone." But what he says, "I'm not alone, for the Father is with me." So even though they would abandon him, even though they would leave him, he understands that his strength, that his, that the Father is there with him through all of that. So this persecution, these, the societal pressure do, you know, they do strange things to people. Why is that?
Because we're weak and you're strong.
Because what?
We're weak and you're
strong. All right, because we're weak, exactly. You know, when Christ was faced with the pressure and the persecution, he stood strong. He was filled with the Spirit. He had the power to do that. And there are times that we are weak, that we don't stand like we ought to. You know, if we would rely upon the Holy Spirit more and allow him to have control of us, we would get victory more often. Greg.
A problem jumps in our lives. A lot of times we focus on the problem and not on the solver.
Okay. All right, so focusing on the problem rather than the one that can actually solve the problem. Good. Talked about that Wednesday night, last Wednesday night. Kind of the same. You know, when you're faced with struggles, where do you go? Where do you turn to? You know, is your first choice looking on, you know, Google and, you know, trying to figure an answer out? You know, what does the Wikipedia say, or what does so-and-so say? Or do you just fall on your knees and pray and say, "God, I need your help. You know, I need to hear from you. I need you to guide my thoughts." And, you know, and sometimes he might guide you to a person to ask help from. Or he might guide you to search something. You know, I'm not saying those are bad things. I'm just saying those shouldn't be our first thing. You know, our first thing should be to pray and to seek God, to ask him for help.
It's easy to love somebody that you see easier sometimes,
yeah,
than it is to see a God that you don't see. To love the praise of men rather than the praise of God.
Right. And yes.
Just, you know, and we have to be honest. If you got a person standing in front of you, especially when you know you've got a God that forgives, you know, sometimes you'll slack up.
So you're saying it's better to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission. but no, your point is well taken. You know, a lot of times it is. It's our thought processes. You know, let me ask somebody that in my mind can answer me right away. You know, that can give me a verbal answer as opposed to praying and realizing that I have to wait on God and for him to give me guidance or direction. But good, good. You know, both Jesus and John understood the reality that persecution and pressure from society does wreak havoc on believers and on the followers of Christ. You know, John witnessed that when the disciples abandoned Christ at his crucifixion. You know, he saw that. He knew as he's writing the Gospel of John, he's looking back and he knows what they had done. You know, he knows that they abandoned Jesus. You know, it wasn't anything new. He also knows that in the early church that, you know, the Christians were faced with similar pressures to abandon their faith. As the persecution ramped up and as they were getting persecuted more and being questioned more, and, you know, as people were beginning to die for their faith, John knew that there were those that turned aside. You know, we see in 1 John 2:19, it says, "They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued with us, but they went out that it might become plain that they all are not of us." All right, so what is the synopsis of that verse?
People that acted like believers, that, you know, maybe got caught up in the emotion or the excitement of something that was happening that was strange, new phenomena, but then when the pressure came, then it was not fun anymore.
Exactly. You know, and that was the whole premise where John's writing from here. You know, this new phenomenon, this new Christian thing, and, you know, the followers of Christ, and, you know, and again, look at Acts. I mean, it was exciting. They're people are being added to the church daily, and lots of, you know, things are happening, and people are changing, and Paul's going out on missionary journeys, and all wonderful, you know, all these things are happening, a lot of excitement, all of that. And so a lot of people kind of join the movement. You know, hey, I want some of that. You know, that might help my small business. That'll help my tent making business. You know, let me make some connections in there and I can sell more tents. You know, I can sell more ships, you know, if I get the right people and, you know, figure out who the movers and shakers are. You know, I might be able to sell a few more ships over here, or, you know, do, you know, sell more fish and all of this. You know, it'll really help my business. But then when the, and everything's great as long as nobody's, you know, putting pressure on you. But then, you know, when you're not allowed to put your little fish symbol on your business sign anymore, or when you say, you know, a member at this church, and now all of a sudden, oh, you know, they don't fly the rainbow flag, so I don't want anything to do with you. Now all of a sudden they have to make a decision. You know, am I willing to take a hit in my business because of my association, or am I going to give that up? And you know, what's more important to me? And so what John's saying here is, he said, you know what, when the persecution came and when they saw that people were actually dying for what they believed in, many of them started kind of slipping away. And, oh, I'm not really up to this. I don't really want that part of it. You know, it was fun and exciting while it lasted, but it's not so fun anymore. So let me kind of, you know, I'll slip out the back door and, you know, have a good life. See you later.
We don't realize how close that's coming to us.
I do know.
An article yesterday about, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Vizulak. He's a armless, legless person. Speaks for God. He goes around the world giving motivational speaking, and he gives credit to God.
Wow.
And he's evidently pretty well to do because of it. And the bank that he was doing business with came out and they said, "You're gone. We're not going to do business with you anymore." But the article went on to tell about the underpinnings of that. And there's an actual movement in the world that if you don't subscribe to certain things that are going on now in the world, they're using the banking system to pressure businesses to either get along or get out.
Wow.
So it's, if you don't subscribe to certain things, and that includes the LGBT movement, the green movement, and all this, they're now starting to evaluate people and businesses based on whether they subscribe to that or not.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
So it's happening under the table, but all of a sudden people are being thrown out of financial institutions because they don't go along.
Man, I'm sure the insurance companies will follow right along soon. And
that'll be the next thing.
It'll be wider spread for sure. And as pretty much as Dick said, you know, we shouldn't really be surprised. You know, that has happened. This has happened all throughout the church's history. You know, think back, you know, why did the settlers, or why did people leave Europe to come to America? Or one of the reasons was for their religious freedom. You know, they were being persecuted for what they believed, and they just wanted have the freedom. They wanted the freedom for everybody to believe like they believed, right? You know, because again, what do we see? People that call themselves Christians often persecute other people that call themselves Christians too. And you know, we need to be cautious about that. You know, and again, as we look at history, as we go back and read, you know, it hasn't always been just the Catholic Church that, you know, persecuted Christians, or some other religion that persecuted Christians. Sometimes Christians have a tendency to persecute people that also claim to be Christians but believe differently than them. And so, you know, we it's not anything new. And we're going to see it again very soon. And it's still taking place in the world today, in other parts of the world. It's just time before it gets to the United States. Yeah, they were pressured, the killing, burning, and all of that's happening still. But you know what? We can be sure that even though we are tempted to abandon our loyalty to Jesus, you know what? Jesus will never abandon us. And that's something that we've got to grab a hold of and believe in. That, you know what, there may be moments of weakness that I don't say what I should have said, or I don't stand up like I should have stood up. But Christ won't abandon me. Christ won't forsake me. He still loves me no matter what. You know, and if I am His, if I am, you know, if I'm sealed with the Spirit, then I am His. And He's not going to leave me or forsake me. He's not going to abandon me. And Jesus understood that even if all human beings deserted Him, what did He say? He said, I'm not alone. The Father is with me. And we can kind of echo that, you know, in our lives. You know, even if those around us forsake us, even if family and friends, I'm thinking about a man that I know right now that's just gone through some bad things. But had one of his sons tell him, you know, Dad, you know, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. And you know, kind of a petty thing. Actually, I can think of two men. One's in our Sunday school class as well, who had a son that basically said, you know, I don't want to see you or talk to you anymore until you do X, Y, Z kind of thing. But you know, even though all of that might take place, God is still with us. You know, God won't forsake us. Jesus said, I've said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you'll have tribulation, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So the last words that Jesus says to his disciples before he begins to address the Father in prayer in chapter 17 summarizes everything that he's spoken to them since he washed their feet in chapter 13. So we have this whole process of 13 through 16 now that we're going to kind of wrap up so all of these things that he has said for them to have peace. And he says, even though I'm leaving, even though that now this is the time that I'm going to leave you, he said, I've said all of these things, the last four chapters worth, so that you will have peace, so that you know that you can have peace, so that you can have the assurance that when I'm gone, that you won't fall apart. And so with that, we'll kind of pick up there with that thought process next week and continue on. Father, I pray that you would bless the service to follow. I pray that you would help us to have faith in you, that our faith would grow. As John mentioned, that our confidence and boldness would grow as well, that you would give us guidance in what we do and those that we need to speak into their lives, and that we would do so with a compassion and a love, but a boldness as well. And we'll thank you in your name. Amen.